friends. Hello, friends. It's Kaylee Greer. And when Sam's not here, I can do all kinds of crazy weirdo things that I want to do. And I can just talk and talk and talk and talk because nobody's here to stop me. Well, hello, everybody. This is going to be a first of its kind sort of episode. It's going to be interesting to see how the heck I do with this and how like I adapt to the idea of speaking to no one. But I have a feeling I'll be okay because typically when Sam and I are together, I just talk a lot anyway and leave very little spaces in between my words for anything else to happen. So I think I'm primed and ready for this opportunity. But hello and welcome to Adventures in Dog Photography, to this little weird week that we're having here. And let me explain. I, Kaylee Greer, am here solo in the podcast recording studio today because Sam, poor Sam, has a kind of a weird ailment, which directly affects his mouth. So this sounds strange, but let me explain. Sam is allergic to certain kinds of fruits, but only when they're raw, not when they're cooked. I don't know if anybody else can relate to this or has this sort of allergy, but it's kind of like mild. We always thought it was like a mild minor sort of allergy because it was just a few fruits and it was when they weren't cooked. And then also he has like a mild allergy to like almonds, but not for the same reason that people with like nut allergies have, but more like there's some sort of coating on the almond or something, just that particular nut that like gives him a little bit of like an irritation in his mouth. Usually it's not that big of a deal except for his mouth gets just kind of like scratchy feeling for a little while. But something happened. It's been, I think, 2 days now. 2 days ago, he decided to make a extremely fancy tuna fish mix. He wanted like a fancy gourmet tuna sandwich. And if there's one thing about Sam that you might know by now is that he's like actually an incredible cook. And like chef, he fancies himself a chef, if you will, and he makes really good stuff in the kitchen. And so he kind of followed this recipe, for like really super fancy tuna salad sandwich. Well, what he did was he cut up a bunch of really like exciting gourmet sort of things to go into the tuna mix. And one of those things was raw apples. And he's like, we had this tuna actually like a couple weeks ago. And I think because it was his first time making it, he just like went really, really light on the apples because he knows about his allergy. And it was fine. We ate it and it was incredible. And I think his feedback from it was like, oh, next time I make that, more apple. And I was like, yes, I agree. It would be so good with more apple. Well, this was our downfall because he made it, like I said, 2 days ago again. Actually, I didn't have any. He just made it for himself. I guess he didn't tell me or anything. What a dirty jerk. What a sneaky snake. But anyway, so he made it with extra apple this time, I guess, despite knowing that he would get a scratchy mouth. And forget it. He didn't just have like a minor allergic reaction this time. He had like a pretty, it wasn't like emergency room levels or anything like that. He didn't like have trouble breathing or anything, but his whole inside of his mouth has like swollen up huge and he's got like cankers everywhere, kind of like his mouth is just a mess. I feel so bad for him. Like abrasions or like, I don't know, just irritation all over the inside of his mouth. So his face is completely swollen like a chipmunk and he's like talking like he's got a mouthful of marbles. So I was like, we had to do this podcast. And by the way, excuse us for it being the one day late. It's kind of because we ran into this and we're like, well, what are we going to do? I'm like, do you want to like try and muscle through it? But I've got to tell you, like, it's really hard to understand him right now and it hurts him a lot to talk. So I was like, let me try and take one for the team for you and see if I can arrange a time to like just record solo so you can have a breather. And Sam, my heart goes out to you. All of our hearts go out to you. We hope you feel better by, you know, this time. I won't say next week because next week's Thanksgiving. Well, I hope you feel better by then, geez. But by this time, 2 weeks from now, maybe you'll be back and you'll be feeling good and you'll be with us. So that is the story of the solo Kaylee time. And I've challenged myself, by the way, to record this all in one super epic mega take and not at all pause or edit or try and like re-record anything because I sound stupid. Because it's going to be so much easier if I don't have to edit anything. And actually, by the way, I don't even know that we've ever actually edited an episode at all, ever. Maybe once or twice, like just minor things. But usually we do it in like one big epic super mega take. So hopefully I can manage that today without sounding like a total goon by myself. But yeah, that's the story. So here we are. I hope you all are well. Forgive me for the one day late. As I mentioned, that is kind of what was going on in the house of dog breath over here. So I figured I would drum up some time today to make it happen. Because next week is Thanksgiving. Well, it'll be next Thursday is Thanksgiving. We usually record on Thursdays because these usually come out on Fridays by Friday morning. Actually, Sam is so good that usually he gets them out by midnight, like 12:01 a.m. on Friday. But regardless, because of Thanksgiving, we're traveling for it. We're going like 3-4 hours away, a drive away. So we will realistically not be able to. I can't see how we'd be able to record in the midst of all that, because I'm not sure if we're going to stay up where we're going or if we're going to drive home that same night. But even still, if we do, I assume we'll get home at like 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. or something. And then Friday is Black Friday coming up. And as all my fellow photography nerds know, there are sometimes good deals to be had on Black Friday in the photography space. And when you're paying, you know, like $2,000 or $3,000 for a lens, like a few $100 off is nice to have. So I think that we are going to be doing we actually usually do this every year for Dog Breath. Is like we're like, okay, it's that time of year. Like, we need to make investments in the business and we need to have like so many write-offs, hopefully. So usually Black Friday, we start to like hunt around for that stuff and get some. I'm hoping there's going to be some deals on some lenses. There's a couple of lenses that I have been eyeing and I'm like so close to pulling the trigger. We've been saving up our Amex points all year. Actually, I think we've had them going for like 2 years now, if that's even a thing. I'm not sure because I feel like they might have expired last year without me noticing. And if they did, I don't want to know about it because I would be devastated because I worked so hard earning those Amex points, you know. But yeah, anyway, so I've had those saving up all year and I think I have like almost $2,000 worth of Amex points. Woo! So I'm going to put that towards a lens, I think. And you ask me which lens, Kaylee, do you ask? You didn't, but I will tell you, I'm looking at the 300mm f2.8, which just came out. But I will say it's probably only in my wildest dreams because I think that lens is like $6,000 or $7,000. So I probably won't, but I am looking at it because I'll rent it. I'm thinking I might rent it. And other than that, the 135 is it? I think a 1.8 f1.8. I think that just came out. The EF. So I am excited. EF? Yes. RF? No. I am extremely thoroughly confused at all times about the terminology that Canon uses on their lenses. One of those is for mirrorless and one of those is the old kind. And now I'm kind of forget which one is which. But you know what I mean. The new 135 for the mirrorless. Someone will correct me. Correct me on the Instagram at Adventures in Dog Photography on Instagram. Sam would be so proud of me if he heard me say that. Alas, he did not. But anyway, so that's the idea. Next week will be Thanksgiving-ing. As probably most of you will be, or at least most of you Americans. I know Canada, you had your Thanksgiving already. And I don't know that other countries have that. If Sam was in here, he'd really be laughing at me right now and he'd be making fun of me. And he'd be like, how do you possibly not know about other countries' Thanksgiving status? But since he's not here, I'll play the role for him. How can you be so dumb, Kaylee? Boopy doopy doop. Nobody else has Thanksgiving except for America. Okay. So this is the part where I would be like, oh God, should I edit that out? Because I sound like an idiot. But since I'm not really up on my podcast editing, nor do I want to be, I'm leaving it in. So you guys can tell me. Yeah, so what I'm going to do this week, instead of our traditional format of going through a photo and going behind the scenes of that particular photo, because I'm by myself and because we were kind of in the middle of kind of our epic journey back home from Las Vegas, I think where we left off was we did part two of Shutterhound, and then we talked about that photo of Junie that we made for the promo material for the Junie's pool party, which was so much fun. Holy moly. I just made like promotional stickers today. I don't even know if promotional is the right word. Like I usually order custom stickers for all my like packaging and stuff that I do when I send out shipments to clients or like cards to them or Christmas cards or whatever. And I put fun dog breath stickers all over everything. And I just ordered new ones today. And I got so many copies of the Junie on a pink flamingo float sticker that I can't wait to give to everybody I know and their parents. It's going to be very exciting. So that's an aside. Instead of going through the traditional format and kind of picking up where we left off, which is we were going to get onto the road trip on the way home, which, by the way, is this now like the longest journey of all time? Because we were supposed to do this like 3 episodes ago and now it's still like beep, beep, next time, beep, boop. But instead of that, I'm going to put a pause on that because I'm by myself. And I'm going to change it up a little bit this week. And this week, I am going to talk to you guys about something that I feel like kind of passionate about. Well, quite passionate about, if I'm being honest. And something that I get asked a lot, kind of just like people kind of slide into my DMs, if you will, all day long, every day on like Instagram and on Facebook. I get a lot of inquiries and just like correspondences from other, you know, pet photographers or people who want to get into pet photography. Something that's really sweet and cute that I get a lot coming through my inbox is kids in like middle school and high school, actually even a few like elementary school kids who are doing projects on photographers for like an art class, and they have to pick like one photographer that they want to like emulate, like interview and then emulate or try to like create imagery in the style or whatever. And it's really sweet. I get those like pretty regularly. And they usually are asking me a couple, like 5 basic questions so they can like write a paper on it. And then sometimes they'll send me the photos that they're taking of their dogs to try to kind of like, you know, encapsulate like a similar like punchy, funky style. And it's so lovely. It's really humbling. I love that. And it's really hard for me to keep up with my dog breath inboxes if I'm being like perfectly candid, but I always try to respond to those ones where they're like young kids doing a project. It's just so humbling to me. But anyway, so with that said, besides those types of messages, I'm getting like a lot of messages from other, you know, dog photographers, or again, people who are kind of interested in it and maybe they want to pursue the idea of being a dog photographer. And they always ask me like, you know, kind of how did this happen for you, or how did you do this, or how do I become, you know, successful and busy? Like, how do I have a dog photography business? Like, basically, what did you do? Or, and I actually gave a talk one of my 2 talks that I gave at Shutterhound was called What It Takes to Make It. And it was kind of based on this principle of like, what would I say to somebody who like slides into my DMs and asks me this question? Like, genuinely, what is the answer? What did I do? And to quote unquote make it, and you know, making it is a little bit of a different, I suppose, definition for everybody, but let's just say making it is, you know, having a busy, successful business where you're charging, you know, what you want to charge, what you need to be charging, what you deserve as an artist. In my case, I don't know that I've ever divulged like my pricing here, but some of you might know, because if you have ever been to workshops with me or mentored with me or are one of my clients, then you would know. But you know, right now, like our lowest package starts in the 5,000 range and goes, our bigger package is around 9,000 and our middle package is like around 7,000. So that's kind of where we sit right now with dog breath photography. There's a lot of details to that. Obviously, we shoot like in collection style, like a wedding photographer would. So you kind of pick 1 of 3 collections that each come with a different thing. You don't get any high-res files until the middle collection. So there's a lot of information to be had there. Nicole Begley, shout out Nicole Begley from Hair of the Dog Academy, who is one of my closest friends in this industry and out of this industry, just a friend in general, helped me a lot back in like 2016 with my prices, because I was like really struggling to keep up with the demand that we had. And I'm so grateful for that. Gosh, crazy grateful. I can't even begin. But all that aside, she was like, listen, supply and demand is just basic economics, and you cannot service all these people that are waiting for you. So you like, either there's nothing else you can do, but you have to like raise your prices so you can shoot, you know, the sessions that you're able to fit in and still be able to bring in like the income that you would get if you could shoot all the few hundred people on your list or whatever. So that was amazing. And she really changed everything for me. And again, there's a lot to be said about pricing, and I could go into all that in detail. But that is kind of for, if you want to learn about that stuff, definitely look into like coming to one of our workshops, because we go really deep into all that and we like really pull up all of our guides and talk about how we got there and profits and whatever. So again, if Sam was in here with me right now, he'd be like, what are you doing? How did you get on to, how did you get onto this deep conversation about pricing when you were talking about, you know, the things that you have to master in order to become a successful dog photographer. So that is coming back around to my point. That is what I'm going to talk to you about today. And if anything, if this goes in the style of how things have been going so far, this will be a 7-hour long episode. So I will try to keep it succinct, which is extremely hard to do when there is nobody here to rope me kind of in, rein it in, Greer. But yeah, so the long and short of it is, when people ask me that question, like, what do I have to do? What do I have to know to become a dog photographer? That's what I'm going to talk to you about today. I'm going to talk to you about the five things. I just made like a succinct kind of cohesive list. Cohesive? Not sure if that's the right word, but of five things that I think that you have to master to in order to become a highly successful dog photographer. So if you did come to my talk at Shutterhound about what it takes to make it, this is going to be a little different. What it takes to make it had more than five things. There was a lot of things. That was a really fun talk. That was the first time I created that for Shutterhound. It was brand new original content. I would be so happy to be able to share that at future workshops and retreats and things like that. But that is not exactly what I'm going to talk about today. So if you did go to that talk, never fear, this will be a little bit different. This is the five things, kind of like five skills, maybe, or five skills you have to master, or potentially things that I feel like you have to like know a lot about or be really good at in order to really have a shot at becoming incredibly successful in this dog photography business of ours. And I think this stuff matters a lot because it's definitely exploded. The dog photography industry has like exploded. Sometimes I sit back and I'm just like, wow, I have to really look at that landscape of dog photography and think, wow, how far it's come. It's so unbelievable. And I remember when I first started, you know, having maybe four or five other people in the world that I felt I could kind of turn to and talk to, communicate, and discuss the industry with, or like kind of what we were, whatever, best practices, or just like have a conversation with somebody who might understand what the heck you're going through as like not only an artist, but like an artist in this extremely weird, tiny little niche that the world doesn't know about, at least at that time. This was in like 2010, early 2010. And now it's crazy because I sit back and I look at all these like resources that exist for if you do want to get into this industry. And it's like, Jesus, I can think of like five or six like big outlets right now for learning like pet photography education. And it's just crazy. I can't imagine having like a username and a password to log into a portal that like has all this stuff just like written down for you. It's so wild and amazing. What an incredible time to you know, be learning about this, because there are so many endless resources. I remember when I used to type stuff about this into Google, and quite literally, like, there'd be like limited search that would come up in terms of like, there'd be like two pages on Google and the search would be exhausted, or like a page on Google and then there was nothing else, because it was just such a barren time, I guess, for that. So anyway, with all that said, I think with it becoming, there's a blessing and a curse to that, right? Because everybody can learn quite a lot more easily now and they have a lot more access to all these resources. But it also means that like it's getting very noisy. It's getting very crowded. So I think it's like more important than ever that if you really want to like own, you know, kind of own your place in this space and have your market share and become, you know, very like busy and booked and successful, both artistically and financially, then these are five things that I'm going to tell you about that I think that you like have no choice but to master. And I think maybe a little bit of this is going to be like a hard talk, like tough love, you know, there are things that, you know, I think like it's easy to put things like gently and softly, and try to spare people's, you know, like feelings or sensitivities. But I also think that that is not super helpful. And believe me, I'm like usually the person that is the one that's like really sugarcoating things to make people feel, you know, I don't want to ever hurt anyone's feelings ever. But the first time I ever really peeled back the layers on all this was at Shutterhound during this talk that I gave, where I gave two options. If you were there, then you might remember that I gave two options for the keynote that I was going to give. And one of them was the baby version for babies. And the other one was like the hardcore version for truth-seeking warriors, you know, because I wanted to say, listen, I can sugarcoat the stuff if you want, but if you really want the truth, if you want my whole soul, then vote for the hardcore version. And I was very lucky that people did vote for the hardcore version because I did not make the baby version. So I guess that's my disclaimer for you before I get into this today, is just that, you know, I hope to not ever like hurt anyone's feelings or offend anybody. Please, please, please don't ever take it that way. But I want to help you. And if I were to sugarcoat or hold back, I don't know how helpful it would be. So let me dive in here. I'm gonna lay it all out there for you on the table. And if you just give me 1 second, I'm gonna do the thing where Chris Sam usually says Chris Miller time. But instead of Chris Miller time, shout out Chris Miller. It's sparkly water time, and today it's an AHA brand lime and watermelon sparkly water. So hold it. All right, I had to have a sip. And you know, sparkly water, like seltzer water, makes you like totally makes you burp. And usually when I'm like recording with Sam, if I have to burp, I can pull my like face away from the mic and he can take it for a minute and he can cover for me. But I'm all by myself, so today's getting real. I'll do my best not to burp at you though. Okay, very ladylike, I know. All right, five things that you have to master. I didn't originally put these in an order of like importance, but I think eventually once I really looked at this list for a long time, I did kind of end up rearranging them in my head to where I feel is the like, you know, kind of the absolute most important things like at the top. So I'm going to do it in the style of 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, starting with 5, which is the least important, but it is still really important. And then number 1 being like the thing that you absolutely cannot negotiate on. You have to have this skill. So let's start. Number 5, be memorable. Have good branding / a clear brand message. Okay, so what do I mean by that? It's really easy in this arena in the industry that we're in, especially because it is so busy now, to kind of get lost in the noise, right? Like, so you have to be super memorable, and there's lots of like ways that you can do that, but I think one of the basic and most important things that you can do is like start off on the right, like the incredibly most powerful right foot, and have super strong branding. And when I say branding, I mean, you know, not only like a great website that's really well designed, that's really sleek and clean, or like great, like, you know, branding materials or a good logo. But I think before you even get to any of that, it's the business name that's like huge, or your name or the business name, but I do have thoughts on that. I'll get there in a second. And then also like your vibe, your style. And we might just get to that later on this list, so I'm not going to go too deep into that yet, but let's just say that your style is like, you know, I don't know, really soft and ethereal, like a fairy tale, but then your business is called like Funky Cat Studios or something. There's kind of a dissonance between like the style of work and then the sound of the name. You know what I mean? Or oppositely, maybe it's punchy and colorful and contrasty work that you make, and then your name is like, you know, like Fallen Leaf Studios or something. I think that there needs to be really strong like coherence between the two, like who you are, what you're about, what your brand personality is, and then like that name. And that name at this point, man, are they getting hard to come by. Because again, when the photography world or this niche of our dog photography world gets busy, the names start getting, you know, the real obvious ones start getting like scooped up, right? So it is hard to make people remember like Paw Prints Photography at this point, right? And I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. And again, if that's your business name, like it's cute. Don't get me wrong. It's super cute. I love a good dog pun if it's not like totally overused and like, you know, cheese ball. I do love that. But I feel like if you were to Google that name, you would find out there are 7,500 other pet photographers with that name or some variation of it. So it would be pretty hard to be remembered at this point with a name like that. So I think that's where your first kind of step is. And I think it's like really important to come up with something that really kind of like smacks people in the face or like just really gets their attention. And personally, I'm not a huge fan of people using their like actual names for their photography businesses. Don't feel bad. Don't feel bad if this is you and this is what you've done, because there are a lot of, definitely there are pros to that. One of them is simply in the world of copyright, when it comes to like the legal part of things, you don't actually have to copyright your own name. So if your business name is, let's just say like Julie Smith Photography, because your name is Julie Smith, you kind of like legally have the right to that name. You don't need to copyright it in order to try to then protect it in court if you needed to. But if you had a name like my name, Dog Breath Photography, obviously not my personal name, a made up name, that has to be trademarked. Copywritten, trademarked, not copywritten. That's for your photos, trademarked for the name. In order to be protectable. And it can be a little tricky with that stuff. I do have my name trademarked. It was expensive, but not completely prohibitive. I think it was like $5,000. I went through a lawyer who helped me do it. You can do it on your own. There are like YouTube videos and tutorials. I'm getting really deep into this stuff, and probably I shouldn't because I have four other things to go over. But I will leave it at, I think you need to be like super memorable. And that could be, you know, again, it should be your branding, your logo, mark, your brand identity, your website, your images themselves, and your business name. It has to be really something special. It really has to be something special these days. Again, when I first started, I feel the landscape was like really pretty wide open still at that point for names and names that were available, but things have really changed on that front, and it's really kind of become a lot harder. So just try to get clever. I don't think it necessarily has to relate directly to dog. I don't think it has to say dog in the title or cat or pet necessarily. I think it would be okay to have a name that was a little more like I don't know, referential to something else in your life that you love, but that's really kind of quirky or silly or memorable or whatever. Or it's, I think names with numbers in them are kind of interesting sometimes. I think simple is great. Again, it can be funny, you know, whatever, stuff like that. But, you know, you can consult me on what kinds of names I like later, because I have a whole list to go through. So let's say number one thing. Oh, sorry. We're starting at five. So number five thing is be memorable, have like good branding, have a good website. There's no excuse at all in this day and age to not have like an excellent website. Between, you know, there are so many companies out there that do templates that make amazing, amazing, really high quality, very professional looking websites for, you know, such minimal amounts of money in terms of like, I don't know, I think one of my websites that I use public facing is like, I think it's like $17 a month. I don't know. Sam could correct me if he was here, but he's not. So let's go with that. And also shout out to SlickPic. SlickPic was a like a supporter of Shutterhound, and it meant so much to me to have them there. They are an incredible custom website company, and they will totally custom design your website for you. It's not like a template where you pick it and then you like, you upload photos and you rearrange the photos and you put them in yourself and you pick the, you literally tell them like who you are, what your brand is. It's kind of, it's much more bespoke. It's much more custom and they design it for you based on your inspiration that you might send through and things like that. And we had a couple of Shutterhound attendees use Slick Pick or like, kind of sign up with them and get their websites done. And I have heard like nothing but rave reviews. So if you are lacking in the website department, you got no excuse. It is 2023. All right. Next, number four. All right. This is what you've got to have in order to be a highly successful dog photographer. You got to have the skill of improvisation or AKA the ability to roll with it at any point in time. So I was thinking, when I was thinking about this, I was thinking about the actual shoot. When you are on location, like when you're on location at the shoot, I think about the thing. Sometimes Sam and I come away from our dog breath shoots and we're like, we've like leaves in our hair. We're like our knees are like bleeding. We have like bugs in our socks and like dirt everywhere. And we're like sweating. And it was like, sometimes it will have been like a complete cyclone, like a total whirlwind of just crazy, unkempt chaos, but also like total magic. But there's a lot that is just happens, just goes wild and unplanned. And I do, we often look at each other and think like, wow, what a specialized, weird specialized skill set we have to be able to conquer these things and make sure everything goes incredibly smoothly. And one of those things is the ability to like just improv when things aren't necessarily going according to plan. I don't almost ever have a plan going into a session. I will know generally the shots that I love to take if I can, if the opportunity arises, and these are the shots that I love to get if it's a possibility. You know, I'll have like five or six at the top of my head, like, oh, I'd love to get, you know, the puppy eyes shot with the dog sitting at my feet and the big eyes looking up at me. Like, that's a great seller. That one sells every time. I'd love to get a shot of like the dog's paw in the owner's hand with a 70 to 200 or 200 mil with nice blurry bokeh background that looks like magic. I'd love to get that. You know, I'd love to get a dog running or jumping or... So I know these things, but every single situation is so wildly different that I can't know for sure what I'm going to be able to get. Depending on the dog, the dog's energy, the dog's level of confidence or level of fear. Also the weather, the light, the pattern, the angle of light, the clouds in the sky, whether or not they're blocking the sun at a particular time when a dog is doing a particular thing and suddenly I can't, you know, nail the shot or like, you know, my gear, my settings. There's just the humans that are involved in the shoots. You know, sometimes they're like super great and totally easy and just a dream to work with, and other times it can be quite challenging, as you guys know. I'll leave it at that, but you know, it can be difficult. And actually I will get into that a little bit more later on this list. But you have to have confidence in your ability to just flex and not be nervous and not feel embarrassed because you had a plan or you might have said, oh, I'd love to do this or that, and then you weren't able to deliver on that or something. You just need to be able to roll with it. So if, you know, you get there and you had all these big ideas and then suddenly a cloud comes out and it fills up the entire sky and now it's overcast and dark and you can't get your sparkly backlight that you like knew you wanted, what are you going to do? I mean, are you going to like ask the client to come back? You could. I mean, it depends on your style. You might, if it's easy enough, ask the client to come back another day, but you want to do it confidently, right? Like, you don't want to be nervous about it. You don't want to be scared. You don't want to make your client feel like you don't have control. Or do you want to just continue? You want to, you know, kind of soldier on because you know that the client planned for this for maybe months leading up to it. That maybe they got the day off of work. Maybe they got a babysitter. You know, maybe they drove 3 hours. So it would be a little tough in some situations to say, well, why don't you go home? We'll try again tomorrow. You know, you can't necessarily be completely disrespectful of someone's like time like that. So you just have to figure out how to make it all kind of happen anyway. And so you have to flex. And not only do you have to flex like personality wise and be able to kind of roll with things and not get too caught up and not get frustrated, but you have to flex creatively. And I think that was definitely one of the hardest things for me when I first started was was, you know, kind of having an idea of what I wanted to do or what I thought I wanted to do, and like getting there and everything's different and the dog totally can't handle what I thought it could, or it cannot like sit up on a log and hold a stay, so I can't do that shot. And now, you know, now it's too sunny, or now it's not sunny enough, or now it's raining, or, you know, I would have to get inside my head and quickly shift things around, but then also still do the thing where you have to like entertain the client and ask them about, you know, their dog and their day and their drive here. And you have to be doing all the things and juggling all the things while improvising. So I feel you'll have a difficult time, you know, really running sessions incredibly successfully without that skill. And it's not necessarily a skill that you're born with, so don't fret if you don't have it, but it is something that can be worked out, you know, essentially, and flexed. So I think that it's something you should work on, whether it's you take your dogs, for example, to a place you've never been before, go to a brand new location, right? And you just get out of the car and you just say, okay, I'm going to set a timer. You know, I have a half an hour to make like two incredible shots. So, and then what's happening is you're walking around, you're on location with your dog, and you have this time limit, right? And your brain is actively kind of working and going crazy and looking at everything and evaluating everything while you know that you are trying to make a creative decision within a certain amount of time. I mean, and that's good practice, but it's not quite like the real thing, right? Because like if you're alone with your dog, then that's a lot more of a comfortable situation to think than if you are with a client or a client's whole family and you're like also trying to do the social thing where you keep everybody entertained and make sure they're having a good time. So I will say shooting with an assistant can be incredibly helpful when it does come to those scenarios where you like need that time to kind of like go internal for a minute and kind of check in with yourself and think. Because if you are alone, it can get a little like socially awkward if you're like, wait a minute, nobody talk. Everyone shut up. I have to think, you know, it's often you're going to have your client wanting to, you know, just making small talk and wanting to talk to you about this or that, or ask you questions. Or so if you have an assistant, it is great to be like, oh, give me just a minute, guys. I'm just going to take a quick walk over there and I'm going to look at the spot that I'm thinking about. And then your like assistant person can hang with the client and the dog and just kind of like, you know, how was work today? What do you do? Where do you, whatever, you know how it goes. Small talk. So improv. I could probably talk more about that. I could probably talk for a whole hour about improv, but that is where I'm going to leave it. So let me move on. Let me recap real quick. Number five, I said you got to be memorable. You got to have a super strong brand and a very clear brand message, and your personality and your imagery and your brand name and all of that should all be cohesive and go along with that. And then number four, I just said the ability to improv or to roll with it. That's going to make running your sessions so, so much less stressful if you have confidence in the ability to kind of just change it up if you need to, because things don't always go according to plan. So with those two said, the next thing I'm going to give you is number three, my third most important thing that I think you have to master. I don't think it's a question of like, do you have to master it. I think it's absolutely you do. So there is no like, maybe I will one day. It's like, I think in order to be super successful, the secret is it's a non-negotiable. You have to be good at it. But you know, that's just coming from me and my experience. Hey, to each their own. Also, that was me right there softening the things that I just told you, because I'm always nervous about hurting people's feelings. Did you see? Did you catch that? I sure did. Okay. Number three is, I have it as like kind of a twofer, but it's one and the same essentially. And that is people skills / communication skills. You would think, hey, Kaylee, this is a dog, like dog photography podcast. And you're telling me right now, like how to make it as a dog photographer. Why do you keep talking about stuff that isn't directly related to the art and craft of dog photography? And that is because, if you want to run a business, especially a business that requires so much personal connection between you and another human being, somebody who loves their dog so much, who has a shared passion with you and loves animals and loves their dog and wants to connect with you, it is a non-negotiable that you have people skills / communication skills. And I'll say what kind of what I mean about that. But so people skills translate. All right. So I know. Let's back up. We're all dog photographers or pet photographers or whatever, animal photographers, because we prefer animals to people. Ding, 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 ding. I totally get that. I know. I feel it. I'm the same. Actually, I know going into all this stuff, I know that I do have, I'm lucky in that I happen to be, I'm not just like a regular extrovert, but kind of an extreme extrovert. I really, really like people, usually. I mean, listen, we all have the same, we all have exceptions. There are some times where people can be tough, but for the most part, for the people that I like choose to include in my life and to be in my circle, which typically does include most dog people, I like people. I like to get to know people. I want to know what they're about. I want to know their stories. I like feel pretty comfortable like with small talk, which I get is can be exhausting. Especially if you're more of an introvert, I get it, because even as an extrovert, I do find small talk like sometimes completely exhausting. Like you just want to get to the heart of the matter sometimes and stop talking about the freaking weather or the, you know, the news or whatever. Or how like, oh, what a good deal this is on mayo at the market basket. Like whatever, you know, you have those conversations with people sometimes and you think like, wow, this is so vapid. What a waste of my breath. So I get that. And I know that this part that I'm talking about right now really is like, can be really hard, especially for artists, because artists tend to be. I think the statistics show that the majority, more than 50% of artists are introverts. So, and probably a lot more than 50%, but the majority for sure. So, you know, with that said, I think it's probably something that will come with time and you have to practice, but it's a people business, right? Like as much as we love animals and we love dogs, the dogs like don't have the checkbook. The dogs can't submit like a credit card payment via like, you know, PayPal or whatever, however you take payments. And if you want to be in business and you want to do this not as like a side hobby, but you want to do it as your full-time career and full-time job, you've got to figure out how to liaise with people. I will say like the amount of word of mouth that like marketing, I suppose, that we've like gotten as a result of just connecting with people and like really caring about our clients, like genuinely wanting to know about their lives and their stories has been like indescribable. It's been really unbelievable the amount of kind of word of mouth, just referrals that we've gotten with Dog Breath. And I think a lot of that really comes from like, of course we meet the client, we love their dogs. Of course we love their dogs. That's all we want to talk about and, you know, do is like cuddle their dogs and squish their dogs and ask them about their dogs. And then of course make incredible photos, right? Incredible artwork for their dogs. But I think really, truly the things that stick with people are like the way you made them feel, the conversations that you had, the questions you asked them, the interest you expressed in their life, in their story, in their adventure, you know, whatever adventure they're on. And I think you can't be disingenuous about it. I think you have to like genuinely care or try and care about people's stories. But people feel that and they know that and they remember that. And, you know, with all this aside, like it's so amazing for referrals, right? Because people feel they connected with you. They feel they can trust you. They want to tell all their friends about you so their friends can have such a great experience too. So that's one part of why like people skills are so important. But the other part is when you're on a photo shoot and you're trying to run a photo shoot and there's about a million things going on all at once and you have to run the day. And again, with confidence, you have to run the day with confidence because you are the master. You are the master of your craft. You are the reason that people are paying you thousands of dollars, hopefully, who knows, maybe more, is because you are the expert. You are the person that they trust in, that knows everything that you need to do when it comes to running the photo shoot. And one of the things that can be challenging, I think you could probably hear my voice like slowing down here because I'm trying to put this in a way that's not at all offensive to anyone. But sometimes it can be challenging to work with the dog's owners, right? Let's put it out there. That's pretty straightforward. Like there are people that are like a dream to work with, and then there are people that can be a little bit more difficult in that maybe they don't necessarily understand like the energy of dog or dog training or dog body language, and they kind of want to, you know, force things into happening. So they might force their dog to sit, for example, and like really like kind of get like a little curt, you know, or angry or frustrated or flustered with their dog because their dog's not paying attention. And so they tell them to sit and they might push their little butt down to the ground like a little forcefully. And then suddenly you have an issue where the dog is not interested in the situation anymore because there's a lot of negativity and there's energy flying around everywhere. And you have to manage that. You have to make sure you nip it in the bud before it all happens. So you have to be really good at communication. You have to say right off the bat, let me set the expectation for you. You're standing in the parking lot outside of your cars before you even go into the location. And this is where you clarify everything about how the session works. You do it clearly. You do it with enthusiasm and kindness, and you do it concisely. So you have to be able to kind of explain everything and how it all works within maybe 2 minutes or less, because people don't have very long attention spans and they want to get to it and they're excited. But also, the clarity of communication clears up so many potential issues that could really run your photo shoot into the ground if you don't take the time to explain. So like I said, if somebody's getting frustrated or flustered and they're trying to help with their dog staying in position, but they're kind of doing a bit of like negative reinforcement where they're yelling and they're getting upset and maybe they're manhandling the dog like a little too much. And you're like, no, that's kind of not how we work. You know, you want to explain all that before you get too deep into that situation. You have to manage energies the whole way through. And not only that, but you have to manage happiness, like the client's happiness, the client's like comfortability with all the situations. So if you're putting a dog up on a rock and you have someone who might be more nervous person, you want to take the time to explain exactly why you're putting that dog on the rock, exactly what sort of look it's going to give in the final image so that they can get on board with you and go, oh, wow, that is worth it. That is worth it. Let's work on the skill of getting my dog on the rock. Often I will show people the back of my camera. I will, even if it's just a picture of the rock and nothing on it, but I can show them the depth of field, the composition, the light. They can go, oh, and understand what I'm trying to get. And suddenly everything changes. Suddenly they're on board with me and they're helping and they're not frustrated or they're not feeling like left out or they're not getting bored with the moment, right? Too, because that's another thing is like, sometimes you might know this feeling. I know this feeling extremely well and you might be able to relate. Sometimes I feel really bad about and like guilty almost about how long it might take me to get a certain shot. And I'm like, oh, I know the client's getting bored. You know what I mean? I know I need to change up the scenery. I know we've got to move on from this spot, but it's going to be so worth it if I can just work it out a little longer to get the right expression and the right angle and the right, all the things, right? Make sure it's sharp and make da da da. So I like to include them in the process and say, this is what I'm doing. This is why we're still here. And then often I set up what's next too, so I can get them excited. So I say like, hey, listen, you know, I know we've been here kind of a long time. I'm seeing something really incredible. I'm so close to bringing it to life. And once we're done with this shot, my next idea is going to take us further down this road. And up on the left, there's going to be this amazing little pond. And we're going to go there just as soon as we finish this one up. And we should be on our way to there in about 10 minutes. You know, and that sets the expectation. And now suddenly, okay, they calm down. They get it. They see what's coming next. Here's a really great example of that. I have been in the dentist chair with maybe 4 or 5 dentists over the last like 3 years now for whatever reason. I've had like a lot of like dental work and like just like situations. And one of the dentists, and this isn't me calling out a person because they are like my family and that I just want to give them a shout out. This is just a real situation. This is just the truth of it. My cousin is one of my dentists. She's one of my best friends in the world. So it makes it really easy when I sit in her chair anyway. But she is a new dentist. She's newish. She has been probably working now for like maybe close to 5 years, but that's pretty fresh when it comes to the tenure of most dentists. And because she's like really passionate, enthusiastic about what she does, she's fresh out of like a dental school, which teaches a much more like modern approach to dentistry. I think there's a lot more like emphasis put on in schooling these days, like put on the like managing of people's energy and anxieties and being a good speaker and communicator. So when I'm in the chair with Elena, my cousin, Dr. Mender, shout out Dr. Mender. she lets me know exactly what's going on in my mouth, right? I can't talk. I can't ask her questions. She knows that. So she'll tell me, okay, hey, this is what we're here to do today. This procedure usually takes about 45 minutes. I'm going to let you know, when we're about like a third of the way through, I'm going to let you know how everything's going and I'm going to give you a status update. So, you know, that's exactly what you'll do. I'll just at the point where I'm starting to wonder what the heck's going on and how much friggin' longer do I have to sit here with this friggin' dental dam in my mouth, right? And then she'll be like, hey, we're you know, 15 minutes in, we're about a third of the way through. I just want to let you know this is what I've done so far. This is the other thing I'm doing right now. And then the next step is I'm doing this and then I'm going to close it up and I'm going to get this out of your mouth. And she gives me status updates and I feel so good about that. I'm like, oh, thank God. It eases my anxiety. You know what I mean? And I just feel like, okay, I can roll with that. Like if you keep me updated, I feel pretty good about that. And then, you know, oppositely, maybe a different dentist who I've sat with, let's just say like older, a little bit more like maybe out of date. I'm not sure. Definitely more of like a gruff disposition, has had me in their chair for, I don't know, 2+ hours before without once, not even once, asking me like, hey, how are you feeling? Also, I'm doing this procedure right now. I'm halfway through. Oh, this is only going to be another 10 minutes. Oh, you know, I'm about to do this. And when we're done, we're going to do nothing. You know what I mean? No status updates at all. So I sit there and I get like flustered and frustrated because I can't ask. And even if I could, I feel rude interrupting him. And I don't want to be a pain in the butt. And I don't want to be like a looky-loo or whatever, like a what's going on? You know, I try to like give him a space to do his thing, you know, and it's a different experience entirely. Like I walk away from that, like feeling dreadful and like dreading the next time. But with Elena, even though the dentist is never, you know, like a fun time, it's not, I don't like horribly dread it. You know what I mean? And I would like recommend her a million times over to anyone looking for a dentist. Even if she wasn't my cousin, you know, it's just the communication ability. And without going too deep into this, I recently had a similar situation with two different veterinarians who were looking at Junie for me. And one of them was just kind of a keep to yourself-y, kind of gruffy sort of person that didn't give me a lot. And I had to kind of peel answers out. And the other veterinarian, I cannot speak highly enough of. I have never experienced such an incredibly warm, friendly, and giving of information person before. So much so that I sent a care package to that doctor after like the appointment with some gifts in one of my calendars and like a thank you card handwritten. And the next time that I had to go to the vet again, I found another of this exact same vet, like the brand of this vet, because I had such an amazing experience at the first one. And the reason I didn't go to the same one was because it was in a different city because I was driving. But that's aside from the point right now. So let me get back to it. I know I spent a long time on this one, so you're bearing with me and that is amazing. Thank you. Basically, communication, long and short of it, is going to absolutely change the way that people perceive you and the way you run your sessions and the way that they feel when they come away. And I want people to feel like I care about them. So I want to ask them about, you know, again, their day, their job. How about not just their job, but like, what was the journey that you took to get to like the career you're at today? And if you had the ability to pick the same career again, would you, or do you have other dreams? Like, I like to ask things like that. And it's not like pandering and it's not like disingenuine because I want to like, you know, make a buck or get a good recommendation or a good review. It's like pretty, it's genuine. I do that. I just like think people are interesting and I want to know more about the other humans that exist on this planet. And so again, if it doesn't come naturally to you, that's totally okay. It doesn't necessarily really come super naturally to Sam, and he's still really, really good at it because it's a skill that he's honed over the years. I can't say any of this stuff without at least shouting out to this age-old book that probably you've all heard of, but maybe not have read, called How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, which came out, I think, in the 30s. So it is incredibly dated. It's sometimes a little bit of a slog to get through, but it changed my life. I found out when I read that book, it's all about like interacting and communicating with people effectively. And I found out when I read it, like I honestly felt I did a lot of that stuff subconsciously without really kind of knowing. But reading that book made me very aware of like the science behind all of it. And it really did like have a huge, huge, profound impact on my life and my business. So I would highly suggest it if you have not read it. Try to get through it. It is, you know, again, it's quite dated, but all the information still stands 100%. And I was going to go quite deeply into communication skills when it comes to emailing specifically as well, because I feel it's a huge representation of your brand kind of leading up to the event, the photo shoot, the, you know, the people's ability to trust in you and read what you're about and your personality. It's really important that you become a good writer, or at least a passable writer. I have had email exchanges where I have felt so endeared to somebody that I felt like they were like one of my closest friends by the time I finally actually met them in person. And then I've also had email exchanges with people that put me off them so bad that I have been red flag city and have been like, I don't think you're the right client for me, and I'm not going to, you know, give you the opportunity to book me based on your email. You know, and that kind of sucks sometimes because not everybody's in-person personality is quite like their emails, which I've discovered, which kind of shocks me sometimes. Sometimes people could be super talkative, super personable in email, and then when you meet them, you're like, oh, like they're kind of, they just kind of, I don't know if it's nerves or anxiety or whatever, but it could be a little bit of like a cold fish or whatever. And then oppositely, I've had people like send me like one line emails with no punctuation and no, you know, capitalization or grammar whatsoever. And they sound nasty. They sound awful. And then in person, they couldn't be nicer. They couldn't be more fun. So make sure that your emails are a reflection of you, of your personality. And hopefully it's a, you know, hopefully it's a kind, upbeat personality, because I think that's what people respond to the most. But regardless, make sure it kind of echoes who you are and what you want to say. All right, that is the longest number three of all time, and now it is over. Okay, number two. This one is going to be the one that I think frustrates the most people. And I know, and I'm sorry, I know. But I feel like all I can say is that as much as like it would be so awesome if it did it, I don't even know if it would be awesome if it didn't make a difference, but it would be great if you could skate by without one of these. I don't think you can. And that is number two, right? Yeah, I'm on to number two now. And that is have a distinct style. Ah, sound the alarms. I know it can be hard, really hard to find a distinct style, especially anymore, right? So this is the similar situation to the name problem where all the names are getting scooped up and there feels so crowded and there's, how do I find anything that's unique anymore? You know, I understand. I do. It is. It's 100%. It's becoming more difficult to stand out with a style that is completely you and completely unique. It is. I feel the same way about like SoundCloud rappers, like any creator in the music space specifically right now. Like there is a lot going on in the like kind of music world, and especially with the advent, you know, of social media and the access that people have now to record their own music and to release their own music. And so like it used to be that there were gatekeepers in the industry that let out, you know, maybe like 5 to 8 like new artists every year, new rappers, let's say, every year. And so they could kind of like keep them unique and keep them special, you know? And now it's like hundreds and hundreds of thousands of new rappers or, you know, musicians or hip hop artists or whatever coming out every day. And I feel like an old lady, like, you know, old lady screams at like lawn or whatever they say, whatever that term is. But I can't tell any of them apart. And some of that has to do with like, it's totally not like my interest genre. So I'm not like really looking with a detailed eye at that stuff. But let's even say like when it comes to just, I don't know, musicians, like any musician, like there's just so many now. It's so hard to stand out and it's so hard to have like a brand new like musical style that breaks barriers. Like I do understand. I get it. It is harder. It is. That is the fact of the times. But I don't think that people are going to line up out your door and around the block and around the corner, you know, 10 times down the street to wait for you or to wait on a waiting list for a year or 2 years for you if you don't have something incredibly unique to say that cannot be replicated by anybody else, because you are an artist. It is your art that comes from your heart. And there is, no matter how much AI and no matter how many, you know, tutorials that people try to take to learn your style, it just can't be replicated because it is something that is so unique to your viewpoint on the world. I know. Let me take a breath. In fact, let me take a sip of this old sparkly water. I tried not to do like mouth sounds into the mic because that's disgusting. Also, I see that I'm at the like, I think 58 minute mark, and I didn't mean to go that long. So let me finish this thought here. Yeah, I don't see how if you make work that is, let's say average, let's say just looks like, you know, maybe a lot of the other artists that are kind of going on in your industry, it is hard to understand why you would be able to garner like a wait list, media attention, for example, clients clamoring at your door to pay you, you know, whatever it is that you need to be paid to do your special work for them, because they could, if your work just looks like everybody else's, just go up the street, you know, to the next guy who's offering it for cheaper. That's the kind of conundrum you sort of get into. And that's also where like the branding that I talked about at the beginning and the personal connection and the communication skills, it all mixes into this. Style is definitely a big part of it, but it's all those things. It's how you separate yourself from the pack. And that is extremely hard to do. I totally get that. But there have been, may I just shout out and call out to the things that have, you know, kind of they did come out and they did surprise people and they were new and they were unique. And there have been people in this industry who have carved out styles based on a particular unique idea that they came up with. And listen, the entire Shutterhound lineup was based on that. Basically, it was like the pioneers of the industry that were leading it ever forward since the very beginning with brand new ideas, right? So it was like the first guy to ever put a dog underwater in a pool. Let's talk about Seth Castile. Nobody had ever seen anything like that. The world had not really ever seen anything like that. I mean, I don't know, maybe they saw like the baby from the Nevermind, like cover of Nirvana's album. You know, it was kind of like this, like, I don't even know if that was really, that baby was really underwater, if that was like a weird composite, but you guys know what I'm talking about, chasing like Dollar Bill, I think. But Seth went, you know, underwater with this wide angle lens, with lighting, with dogs like swimming and catching things, and their mouths are open and they're in the middle and they're in a pool and it's everything's blue and it's, nobody had ever seen anything like that. So like, is it any wonder that Seth got like mega $1 million book deals? You know, is it any wonder that Seth is like known the world over for that work, which has been emulated and copied and duplicated so many times? But has anybody else ever got the New York Times, you know, best-selling book? Has anybody else ever got all the calendar deals and the puzzle deals and the clothing deals? And no, because it's not novel anymore. It's not unique anymore. It's unique to him, and it's his thing, and it's what made him incredibly successful. Sophie Gaumont's a great example. She's the one who popularized the pit bull and the flower crown with the pastel background and the kind of like sparkly border around the edge. It's not to say that a dog had never ever worn a flower crown before in the history of the world, but it is to say that Sophie brought that to photography. She brought it to dog photography. She brought it to imagery in a very specific, unique, and special way that really like rocked the socks off of like the art world, you know? It's like William Wegman with his Weimaraners, dressing his Weimaraners up in like human clothing. And then, you know, and then suddenly getting like ad campaigns and shooting for Vogue and shooting for, you know, Max Azaria, BCBG or whatever, it's however you say that brand, you know, suddenly shooting for Chanel, I think he has, you know, things like this. That's because it was novel and unique and new. And I just don't know how to say that if you don't have something completely original to say or share, it's going to be hard to break out. I don't think it's impossible. I think that you could probably do well in your local like market with like average dog photography. But I think if you like want crazy success, you've got to come up with something. You've got to come up with something unique and something that that's you. It's what you are known for. It's like Christian Bieler with the dogs catching treats. I know everybody tries to do that now. And that's, you know, it's okay to try it, but to claim it as like your style and your thing doesn't really work anymore, right? Because it's been done. And that's what happened with Christian Bieler and how he, you know, kind of claimed his space in this industry. And it kind of goes on and on like that with like some of the really iconic kind of names in this industry. Alicia Zimsławska, somebody, I always say her name wrong. She's going to kill me if she listens to this. Alicia Zimsławska, that's how you say it. And she kind of popularized, I don't want to say kind of, she definitely popularized that style of, you know, dogs, really shallow, gorgeous apertures with amazing, you know, blurred out background, shallow depth of field with kind of matted out, like neutralized colors, I guess, like, I don't know how to describe it, ethereal, fairy tale, totally magical in every way. And she like absolutely blew up from that when she was like 16 years old, like a long time ago now. And it's definitely a style that's become incredibly popular, but it's not, it doesn't belong to anybody else except for Alicia, you know? And I think that it's going to be hard to get known for that at this point, right? Because you're always going to be overshadowed like by the original. So I hope not to hurt anybody's feelings, but I hope to say, find your thing. You know, there, I want to, let me shout out to Belinda Richards. She's an Australian photographer. I think she's Australian. I'm not sure if she listens to this. If she doesn't, somebody say hi to her for me. If she does, hi to you myself, Belinda. But if you haven't seen Belinda's work, give it a Google. It's so refreshing. It's so different. It's original. It's original thought. It's a lot of composite work. It has so much humor and whimsy and silliness running through it. She's not looking at the shit that everybody else has done and being like, I'm going to recreate this. It's how do I bring something original and unique to the table? And I think at this point in time, there's a small number of people that can be kind of called out for that, because it's much easier to take ideas that exist and recycle them. But really, I mean, really, truly, if you want to be known for something and have people lining up out your door and around the corner, like people do for Sophie's work or for Carly Davidson's work from her Shake series or for Seth's work, like how much would you pay for a photo shoot of your dog underwater in the pool with Seth if your dog does dive in the water? If he doesn't, I think you're out. But, you know, how much would you pay? I don't know. I would certainly make a large investment in a photo like that from a master artist like him. So it's something to consider. It's something to think about. It's not something I want to say to, you know, again, like stir anything up or hurt anybody's feelings. But I do think if you want to know the truth, if you come up with something, whether it's a series, a concept, a look that is unique and brand new, that is not just a repeat of all the things that the public has seen a lot of times now, that is your secret sauce. That is a huge, huge part of it. And then that concludes my number two. And now I am on to the number one skill that you absolutely have to master in order to be a highly successful dog photographer. And that is knowing dog body language and really dog training, like dog training, having a bit of dog training skills and knowing dog body language intimately and not messing around when it comes to that knowledge base and trying to move forward in a photography business where you don't necessarily feel that you're a master of the subject. For example, when people ask me to photograph cats or horses or things like that, I will say to my clients, like, hey, if you have a dog and you want to book for your dog, and then you also happen to have a cat that goes outside, by the way, because my style is based entirely outdoors, I am happy to do that for you. I cannot guarantee you the cat's photos are necessarily going to be of dog breath quality, but I am happy to do that for you and make that effort. I just always disclaimer it with, I am not a master of cats. If your cat decides he doesn't want to work with me, if he's just scared or fearful, I do not have the skill set to accurately make that work. And I've worked with a few cats, maybe, I don't know, less than a dozen in my whole career. And usually I find it to be awesome fun and I love it. And I love the way that like cats take light. I think they're so gorgeous. I think they have the most unbelievable eyes, but I cannot predict what a cat is going to do next at any given time because I don't know cat behavior. I know it enough. I know it in the amount that you would know it if you owned a cat. So, right, I've had cats before in my life. I kind of know a little bit about their body language based on like sharing a home with a cat, but I have not studied cats. I've not read like every book about cats and cat body language. I have not watched, you know, documentaries about like cats. I haven't worked with, I don't know, 10,000 cats at this point. So it is like incredibly important that you are like the master of your subject. you know, what separates me from an unbelievable, let's say there's a commercial job on the line. Let's just say we're like, let's talk to Pedigree and it's, you know, they've got an ad campaign coming up and they've got $150,000 to spend on a photographer who's going to shoot 5 images of dogs on a white backdrop for them. All right. Then maybe the bidding starts to go from, you know, they start with 5 photographers and then they narrow it and narrow it. Maybe now they're at 2 photographers and maybe now they're at Kaylee Greer. Woo! Woohoo! And, you know, let's make up a name. Art Jones. And Art Jones is an incredibly accomplished commercial photographer. He knows lighting inside and out. He has 40 years of experience. He has, you know, what is that? Like 28 more years or 27 more years experience than I have, right? So I'd be like a baby compared to him. And he has worked with every major brand from Nike to Champion to Jockey. Why did I pick all sports brands? I have no idea. And then there's me who's, you know, like a baby in the industry comparatively and maybe has some commercial experience, but certainly not 27 years of it. And the brand goes, well, we have this big budget and we've got to spend it wisely. Who are we going to pick? To be honest with you, the wiser investment, and not just because this is my podcast, is Kaylee Greer. And I have heard and discussed many times with art directors in the past that I've worked with that the scenarios very similar to that have come up many times and they have chosen me in those cases. And maybe not always. Maybe people have been dissuaded before by, you know, maybe more experience in front of a commercial set, for example. But often they find these brands or art directors or clients, let's say, find extreme value in the very dog specific experience that I have. So Art, whatever I said his name was, Art Jones, he might be an amazing photographer, but he might have almost no experience with working with dogs. Maybe he's shot cows before or a zebra or, you know, parakeets or something for Petco or something like that. But he doesn't necessarily have like extensive experience with dogs. But then the client might look at my work and say, oh, hey, like we see in her imagery that this person can communicate with dogs and can work with dogs and knows what to do and not to panic. If there's an issue on set, you know, with the dog, how to manage that energy, how to get the good expressions, how to make sure the dogs are comfortable the whole time. Those skills are like ridiculously invaluable. And hearkening back to the more towards the beginning of this podcast, when I talked about Sam and I rolling out of any giving photo shoot with like leaves in our hair and bugs in our socks and dirty butts and, you know, kind of bruises. And like we have been in some scenarios where we have said like privately behind the scenes to each other, how in the world could have any other photographer like on earth been able to figure that out and just make that work? And when we say that, we mean like if there was a person who was an excellent photographer in that situation, but was not a dog photographer or didn't really have the innate dog knowledge, no way in hell they would have been able to pull it off. So we kind of rely and fall back on our like dog training skills and our dog like body language and behavior knowledge to get us through some sticky situations. And we've been able to pull, gosh, probably 90, if he was here, he'd probably agree with me, like 98% of like situations that arise where things go awry and wrong. And we suddenly have, you know, like an extremely fearful or an extremely stressed out dog on our hands that will not do anything and has completely shut down. Probably in 98% of cases, we have gotten that dog back and we have figured it out. And we have figured out a way to work with the dog in a way that makes them feel comfortable, that makes them feel free and happy and gives us the expression that we need. That's not forced. That's not, you know, just like... I don't force moments from dogs. I think, you know, that's really important to know. And I think a lot of you guys listening to this podcast are the same, you know, because if you are a dog photographer, then you likely know dog body language and dogs themselves quite well. But I think the whole entire, you know, idea of being a dog photographer is entirely built on the base of dog training skill and kind of knowledge of dog, you know, body language and behavior. If you don't know that, you have nothing to start with. It does not matter how good your lens is. It does not matter how good your camera body is. It doesn't matter how nice the light is, how good the sunset is. If you can't get the dog to stay where you need it to stay and make it feel comfortable while doing so,
you have nothing at all. You have nothing at all. You have a beautiful sunset that you can look at through your viewfinder, and you can take some nice shots of a log without a dog on it with a cool sunset behind it because you couldn't get the dog to work out with you in that situation, you know? So that has saved us a lot. And there have been times on big shoots, like really big shoots for brands, like multi-day long campaigns, where we were the ones that were able to get the dog to come back to us and work with us over anyone else on set, you know, where there might be people from the, you know, on the team from the ad agency, and there's a bunch of people there, and there's a dog trainer with them. And then there's also, you know, people from the client. So the brand will be there, and they'll be there, and they'll be trying to help too. And there's like sometimes a lot of cooks in the kitchen. And if a dog shuts down or has an issue and you're right in the middle of it and all this money's on the line and all these people are there, you have to figure out how to make it happen. And I'm super, super proudly say that, you know, it's been 2% of the time. So say out of 100 dogs, maybe one to two would be like, we cannot work with this dog. It's 100% shut down. Every other dog that's ever had an issue, which is the great majority of them, have some kind of an issue throughout the shoot, we have figured it out. And that is because everything we do as dog photographers is based entirely on this number one, which is the knowledge of dog behavior / having dog training skills. And if you do not have those skills, no offense at all, but it's not enough to just love a dog and to be like, well, I have a dog, so I kind of know about this stuff. You have to put in the effort to read some books on dog training, probably take some classes, maybe get mentored by a great dog trainer that you really admire in your area, you know, get either magazines or read blogs or, you know, about dog training and the science behind it. Take some classes for sure. I'll shout out my friend Janet Liu, who I photographed her dog recently, this past summer, and he is a Great Dane. His name is George, and he is unbelievable in personality, in looks, aesthetically. He is so stunning. But his photo shoot was one of the most incredible, most unforgettable dog breath photo shoots of all time because of his training. His training and like Janet's knowledge of him and how he works and the way that he's trained and the skills that he knows because of her and her knowledge of dog body language, made the shoot like just 10 out of 10, the most unforgettable thing. And we could get so much magic out of George for these photos with him remaining incredibly comfortable and having the most fun of his life while creating images that were just like totally out of this world and so special. And that's because of Janet's like dog training skills. And that will make anyone, that will give anybody a massive leg up on everybody else who's trying to become a dog photographer. If you're at square one with everybody else, but you have the dog training knowledge, you're 10 steps ahead. So you're no longer at square one. Oh, man. Yeah, so that's it. So let me recap real quick then. Number five, I said you need to be memorable and have really excellent branding and a strong brand message. And all those things have to go hand in hand with your style, your personality, the vibe that you give off, the way that you talk, the way that you type, the way that, you know, the way that you your messaging is on your website, etc. Your logo mark, everything. Number four is your ability to improvise on a shoot / roll with it and your confidence in doing so. Number three is people skills and the ability to really take care of clients and make them feel special and important, and also set up your photo shoots for success because you're clear about the process and you're thorough about everything that you say. Number two is the hardest one to do, and I totally do understand that, but I think it's an incredibly fun adventure going out into the world and being creative and trying to make sure that you can figure out how to hone in on your own distinct style. Again, number two is having a distinct style, making incredible, like jaw-dropping work that is going to set you so far apart from everybody else in your market that you are going to have people chasing you down. People are going to wait on waiting lists for you. People are going to wait with bated breath while you release your shoot dates on Instagram because they just cannot get enough of what you make, and they would be so privileged to be picked by you to be to have their dog photographed. You'd have media reaching out. These are things that are reserved for that incredible kind of once in a lifetime surprising art and style that hasn't been seen before. And I know there's no easy button for that. I totally know. I can't tell you what it is. I can't tell you what your style is. I can't tell you what the next big thing is. I certainly have some ideas of how dog photography can be taken to the next level, but it's within all of us, right? It's within you. There is nothing I can do to have shaped your personal life experience to make you see dogs and see art in a certain way. I know that for me, I see dogs and art in a certain way because it all relates back to the golden retriever that I had when I was 5 years old. And the way that I would look up at him from my like little tiny stature, looking up at this majestic dog who was bigger than me, who was larger than life, seeing him from underneath his chin, you know, type of thing. And that's the way I see dogs now. I put dogs, you know, up on things and I have these low angles and this perspective because that's exactly how my little five-year-old heart saw dogs as heroes, as superheroes. And that is not something you can, sadly, is not something you can teach in somebody. It's something you have to find. And it comes through getting out in the world and practice. And the number one thing that you have to learn, and by the way, this one's good to be number one, right? Because it's easy, because it isn't necessarily the style thing. This is something you can go seek out in a book and you can find it and you can learn it. And that is excessive, very thorough, not comprehensive knowledge of dog trainings kind of skills or dog body language and behavior. And that concludes my list of the top five things you have to master in order to become incredibly successful. There we go. Dog photographer. Ta-da! With that, I think I am pretty deep into the length of this thing, so I am going to go find myself some dinner in a second, but I did want to say a couple of quick things. One of them is I know I mentioned Hound Vision on last week's episode, which is a dog photography workshop coming up in Anna Maria Island, and I just wanted to mention that it is full now. So I had gotten a couple messages from people like inquiring and like hoping there might still be some room, but just to cover kind of everybody, I'm so sorry. It is full. They usually sell out really, really fast. We just happen to have those one space, or it might have been two spaces, like open up because people who had applied and had committed, like had something come up, and then those spaces popped open real quick. But it is full right now. I'm not sure when the next Hound Vision is going to be, because we have a Barca retreat coming up in Iceland in June of this year, which is already full as well. That filled off of, I don't even think Nicole released that to the public. It filled off of the wait list. But so because we're doing that, we're going to Iceland. I don't know if we're going to do another Hound Vision in 2024. I think the only one is the one in January, but probably in 2025. I guess we'll see how that all shakes out, because I've got big plans for Dog Breath that is going to have me really busy, but we will see. I just wanted to mention that. So thank you guys, all of you who did message with your interest. And I love all of you. And I wish I could have all of you there. It's so hard with these houses have such limited, well, I mean, we try to book huge houses, but still there's like limited like physical bedrooms, you know. And the other thing I just wanted to mention actually is really exciting. I get a lot of inquiries usually about if I have calendar, like this time of year usually is when I get the inquiries about if I have a calendar for sale. And usually I did have like a big mass market calendar in like 2014, and it was in Barnes & Noble and all the places, and that kind of set the precedent, I think, for a while that I would always have one. But after that year, I did not re-sign with that particular publisher. That's a story for a different day, but what a nightmare that was. So after that, I didn't do them for a while, but I do have a calendar this year for 2024. It is out now. So actually, before I get too deep into that, it's kind of weird because this year not only do I have one calendar, but I have two calendars, two different publishers. One of them is like your traditional straightforward like 12 by 12 calendar that you would find in like a Barnes & Noble or at a bookshop or whatever. And in fact, you can find it there. So if you do not want to buy, you know, or order from me, you should. Sorry, I'm talking so fast. I'm like choking on my words. Sam would 100% be making fun of me right now. So we'll see if he listens to this episode and then does make fun of me in all the spots that I predicted. And I'll let you know. I'll update you. Sorry, awkward silence. I had to have a sip of water. I am weirdly uncomfortable with silence. I don't know what that says about me, but anyway, second calendar. Oh yeah, first one's Barnes & Noble and all the places. It should be pretty much anywhere calendars are sold. Although I have a special stock here that we are going to be releasing on our website in a couple days' time. So this is should be out on Friday. Let me see. What the heck is the date? I'm going to date this right now. Friday, November 17th is when this podcast comes out. Probably by Monday, what is that going to make Monday? 18th, 20th. This should be finally up on my website for sale. The ones that come from me, I've got to look into the logistics, but I think I'll be able to sign. Stick with me and I'll let you know on that. So that will be kind of what's different about them coming from us. So you can order that one, and that one's more of a traditional calendar that you would expect, like, size wise. And the other one is, oh my God, it's so special. It is so, so special. The other one is more of a piece of art. It is like a piece of fine art. It is was printed by an incredible, like, world-renowned print house in Belgium called Albi de Koker. They're like a fine art printing house. This calendar is huge. It's huge. It's vertical, which is kind of weird, actually, because I normally shoot everything horizontally, but I was able to format a lot of my photos for vertical to make this work. And it is, I want to say it's like, I've got to look at the exact specs, but it's something like 20 inches wide and like close to 30 inches high. So it's a piece of, like, artwork, like a big artwork for the wall. And it's, you know, but it's got the 12 months. But the calendar grid on this one is tiny. So it's really more about the artwork. There is a calendar grid on it, but it's just like at the bottom and it's tiny, tiny, tiny. So it's like a little bit of an excuse to call it a calendar. You know what I mean? But it's an excuse to have 12 amazing photos on your wall that, like, change every month. And it's kind of fun, but it's also fine art. The paper is like this really super fancy, I can't pronounce, German paper with, like, heavy, heavy weight. It's spiral bound. It's going to cost me $1 million to ship them, but I am trying to make it happen. I will make it happen. I've been in talks with my friend at the post office, so we should be able to be good to go there. So that one's going to be definitely like a special, special thing. And that one's, those are kind of limited, but I think those are going to also be released on Sunday on my website. So just so you know, keep your head up. I know I can sign those ones. The other ones, the mass market ones that I mentioned, the first one I mentioned, they're all sealed up in plastic. So I'm trying to decide if it's worth it to, like, break open all the plastic to seal them, or if it would kind of, like, expose them to damage and stuff during shipping. I'm not sure. But I can sign the fine art ones because they're in this, like, amazing, gorgeous box. And in the box, I can, like, take the box apart and sign them and then put it back together just like new. So that's my long, long story short. Look for my website. I'm going to make an announcement on Instagram, too, if you follow me there. When they are for sale, but I'm so excited. And they would make, like, I'm not a salesperson at all, by the way. So if you don't need a dog calendar in your life, hey, don't even worry about it. I still like you. But if you do need one, these are awesome. And if you do have a crazy super dog lover in your life, I'm just saying, it's a pretty special gift, especially that fine art one. Whoa, boy, it's huge. It's magical. It's really good for, like, a, like, an office or, like, a studio or something. It's quite lovely, if I do say so myself. And then I just, last thing I wanted to mention, I wanted to wrap up with, is that I know I said it at the top of the show, but just in case you missed it, there won't be an episode next week because next week is Thanksgiving. Like I said, we'll be going pretty far away. We're going like 3-4 hours north for that. So I know we won't really have the bandwidth to be recording on Thanksgiving. And then Black Friday, like I said, gotta do your photography shopping. So the following week after that, the week after Thanksgiving, we will be back with our normal, back to normal programming. Hopefully if Sam's mouth heals, send Sam all the love. I should take a picture of him. He looks insane and it's so funny. He looks like a little chipmunk. Of course, per usual, I've got to close this sucker out with a little song. So I thought, well, I can, even though Sam's not here and he would normally be the one that would hold me accountable to the song, I'm going to do it anyway. So to everybody who listened to me blabbering on for, I don't know, an hour and a half all by myself. Look, I did it. Thank you for hanging out with me and thanks for staying for this long. So I will see you guys in 2 weeks' time from now. And I'm going to say, Sam's not here. Sam's not here. Oh, my dear. I guess it's safe to say you should have no fear, because there ain't no one cooler than Kaylee Greer. See ya.
Adventures in Dog Photography with Kaylee Greer and Sam Haddix is a Dog Breath production. Follow us on Instagram at Adventures in Dog Photography and be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.